The News Dissector with Danny Schechter, Fridays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Now it's a sing-along.
Okay, all right.
It was Christmas in the workhouse, happiest day of all the year. And the paupers was contented, 'cause their guts was full of beer. The master of the workhouse, he strode through the dismal halls. Yes, he cried, "A Merry Christmas!" But the paupers answered, "Balls." Yes, he cried.
Well, there you go. That's Tule Kupferberg, the late Tule Kupferberg, one of the founders of the Fugs, one of the great musical groups coming out of the 60s and Lower East Side. Tule died recently, a year or two ago, and we miss him. And this was a song of his collected by Bill Adler on his annual Christmas Jollies album, where he scans the world for the coolest and weirdest Christmas music, and he releases a private edition CD. He's been doing it forever. Bill is a publicist in the music industry. He was, and a writer. He's coming out with, I think, a book on Run DMC. Bill Adler is a buddy of mine. He sends me this every year, and I try to play a little of it. Christmas Jollies, 2011. Bill Adler's album of Christmas music. That's the late Tule Kupferberg. I'm Danny Schechter, your News Dissector, here on News Dissector Radio on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. This is a program that we do every week at this time to try to analyze the news. It's an extension of my blog at newsdissector.com. Today we have an interesting conversation planned, but once again, sort of subverted at the last moment when our guest, to be, is not to be. To be or not to be, the answer, no. It's not to be, but we will continue anyway with a discussion of one of the issues that is very upsetting to many people in this country, the passage of the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, signed by the president on New Year's Eve, and authorizing the indefinite detention of citizens captured on U.S. soil. We're going to be talking about the NDAA. We're also going to be meeting, hopefully, and talking with the Bobby Cannavaro, who's an artist of note, who's actually Bobby Sanabria, the conductor of the Manhattan School of Music's Afro-Cuban Jazz Orchestra. He's involved in a big fight with the Grammys, which have decided not to honor any of the Latin jazz artists, in fact, to drop 31 categories of music. This is sort of an outrage. I don't know if you know about it. I wrote about it on Al Jazeera, and it's going to lead to protests at the Grammys in February in Los Angeles. Bobby is out of town, but he's going to take our call at 1:30. We're going to hear more about this lawsuit. So all of that and more on News Dissector Radio here on PRN.
To chase and to Wachovia, Wells Fargo, Sally Mae, to MasterCard and Citibank, and also
that was my theme song for my film, In Debt We Trust, the In Debt We Trust anthem, paying tribute to the various predatory lenders in America who have us all by the old cojones. And we're going to be, that's an issue that we'll be revisiting here on this program. For now, we want to talk about the NDAA. You can join us on the phone at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. The question here, has the president signed off on a measure that will allow for the indefinite detention of American citizens and others with no legal rights whatsoever. You know, go directly to jail. Do not pass go. Do not, in fact, talk to your lawyer, because your lawyer can't help you. The progressive community, libertarian community, have argued that this NDAA codifies the president's ability to detain a U.S. citizen captured on American soil until the war on terrorism is declared over. When will that be? You remember Mr. Cheney, the former vice president, saying this was a 50-year-long war that we are involved in, although most people who follow these things know that you can't really have a war on terrorism. So it's a war of errorism. But nevertheless, it will continue. In this past week, there was a protest by Occupy Wall Street and various activists here in New York. I think it started at the Public Library, went to Grand Central Station. Cat Waters was there. What was happening there, Cat?
On, sorry, I'm trying to remember what day it was.
Right, I didn't even know today was Friday, okay? I was, like, confused because of the short week. But you were there at the protest, let's say, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday. Tell me about it.
Okay, so we met at the steps of the library at Bryant Park about noontime. You know, there was enough people there, you know, like hearty people already to start the new year. You know, as unimpressed as they can. So we marched from there to
Grand Central Station?
No, actually from there we went to 3rd Avenue, 780 3rd Avenue.
The offices of Senator Schumer?
And Senator Gillibrand.
Okay.
But we were actually across the street, kind of just like one block short. At, you know, the office that they used to be. I think, like, he just moved within, like, a day or so.
To get away from the protests of Occupy Wall Street, probably. Or probably someone didn't know that he had moved. In any event, you protested at the senators, and then there was a move on to the Grand Central Station, and there were some arrests there. Tell us about that.
Right. I was not physically present at that demonstration, but the Occupy Wall Street people were basically just at Grand Central Station trying to inform people, you know, that this bill on New Year's Day, when there's a holiday, they do it when, you know, people are just distracted by holidays. That's usually what they do. Signing this bill that can detain Americans just under the suspect that they are, you know, what they seem to be a terrorist without trial, without, you know.
So people were kind of angry about this.
Right.
As are people, you know, all over the United States. It's particularly many of the supporters of President Obama have been very upset by Obama supporting this measure. Now, you should know that the Talking Points memo has a special report saying that the Obama administration is pushing back on the liberal criticism over the NDAA's indefinite detention. The administration, an administration official, said the interpretation was that the NDAA wouldn't allow you to detain anybody you wouldn't have detained before the bill passed. We have said as a policy matter that this administration will not put U.S. citizens in indefinite detention, according to the senior administration official who wouldn't allow himself to be quoted by name. Could a future administration hold a U.S. citizen in military detention? Yes, if the authorization allows it, but that would have been true without this bill. According to him, the bill was supported by Senators Joseph Lieberman, Ben Nelson, Jim Webb, who take very conservative stands on national security issues. This bill basically sees the United States as a battlefield and gives American officials the right to act against people they consider to be associated with terrorists. This is very controversial and a big debate. Now, last night, I heard the best explanation of this that I've heard so far from none other than Jon Stewart. Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, who had been a supporter pretty much of President Obama. Obama's been on The Daily Show and all the rest, but this was a little too much for him. Let's listen.
Craig Shirley, author of the new book, December 1941.
Guess what? I think we're starting the show rather than starting the segment.
Let's begin tonight with the president and the executive branch of the United States government. In recent weeks, months, there have been expansions of executive power that many have found troubling, but perhaps lack the hyperbolic vocabulary to properly condemn. Your prayers have been answered.
Republicans call it an unprecedented power grab.
It was very intemperate and arrogant and irresponsible.
Arrogance of power, abuse of power.
Who cares what the law says? Who cares what the rules are? I'm the president.
Finally! Elected officials in our vaunted punditocracy speaking truth to power, standing up against, I'm assuming, the recent codifying of indefinite detention of Americans, or perhaps the unrestricted and secret use of drones that rain death from the sky, or maybe the president's most recent outrage, the institution of mandatory Sharia school lunch, where even the most American of sandwiches, PB&J, must wear the hijab. So, which one of these all true things are they objecting to?
The president is naming Richard Cordray as head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Huh? So Congress created a bureau to protect consumers' financial interests in 2010, and now the president is, not 2 years later, hiring someone to run it. What kind of monster.com is he? How is filling a position that Congress created an arrogant law?
Well, that's Jon Stewart. Unfortunately, we're not right at the beginning of the bit that Jon Stewart talks about. The NDAA is extremely scathing and very critical of the president. Here he's talking about the recess appointments that were made of members of the National Labor Relations Board and the head of the Consumer Protection Bureau, the bureau that was formed initially with the total involvement, you know, of the Harvard professor who is now running for Senate in Massachusetts, you know of whom I speak, and who then was not nominated to head the affair. Instead, we have the president nominating Mr. Cordray, who's a former attorney general in the state of Ohio, and the Republicans refuse to confirm him, refuse to support it. So while they support the bureau, they don't support anybody to head the bureau, which is a way of sabotaging the bureau itself. And Obama has now appointed, under the terms of a recess appointment, which is, you know, much too complex for me to try to explain here, but he is now the head of the bureau. What he'll be able to get accomplished in the next year remains to be seen. It's certainly an initiative that's been supported by people who approve of the need for more financial regulation. And this is something that, you know, has been a controversy. The point that Stewart was making is that the Republicans who ganged up on Obama about these, you know, Consumer Protection Bureau and the appointment of the people to had the NLRB, the body that regulates labor and labor relations, did not have anything to say of a critical type about this law that could potentially allow the president to detain American citizens without any trial. Now, what the White House is saying, it's really a kind of very subtle point, an interesting point. They're saying, oh, no, the president expressed reservations in approving this bill, but he also said that his administration would not do it. Now, this is basically a tacit way of saying, vote for me if you're worried about this, because if you put some other guy in, they might do it. So, in a way, it's a way of negatively reinforcing his campaign, and it's really crazy because the administration, you know, says they won't do it, but they could do it. The next president might do it, or probably would do it. So it's a very convoluted issue, Kat.
Sounds like blackmail.
It does sound like blackmail. It sounds like a way that the president is saying, if you're afraid of this happening, support me because I won't do it.
It's like having a gun to your head. Vote for me or I will push this bill.
Right, exactly. The Obama administration now is saying to the blogosphere, who have been criticizing him mercilessly, don't worry about it, no sweat, everything is cool. But, it, you know, it's an example, a further example, if we needed one, of the president's unwillingness. Catherine and I both have sort of a condition of...
Speak for yourself.
Well, you seem to have it too, you know, of a tongue that's not working properly at this hour of the day. But, you know, what I'm basically getting at here is that this convoluted bill was supported against the objections of the American Civil Liberties Union, who we tried to get on this program and who you have to leave a message for. Nobody calls you back. And the Center for Constitutional Rights, who didn't have anybody to help us understand this better. But we're trying to explain it anyway. We have a caller from Queens on the line. You want to comment on this NDA? Introduce yourself.
Absolutely. Good afternoon, Mr. Schechter. My name is, for the sake of KJ, from Queens. And I just wanted to point out two things about this bill. And we should mention that the NDAA is a annual act, a bill that is passed to authorize funding for the military. And the importance of that, so it's not just to denounce the entire bill, because it would seem as if we don't contextualize it, we wouldn't quite understand what's particularly wrong about this particular authorization.
So in other words, the bill itself is needed to keep the military in business. So everybody would support it, and they tacked on to this bill this other provision, which is really the disputed issue, the controversial question about whether or not this is needed or not and what its implications are. And so if you wanted to support the military getting money, you had to support the whole bill. Obama supported it, although he issued certain, quote, reservations and a signing statement about it and said that he wouldn't enforce it. But it's still on the books, and it's still kind of dangerous, I think.
That's correct. But what's most important about it, there are two things that I find insidious about it. First is a benevolent dictator is a dictator nonetheless, and Barack has certainly shown himself to be willing to side on that. And there's no argument whether it's he or the next president. The thing is the usurpation of our constitutional rights and the sovereignty of our government, our presumption of the people and what the government's supposed to do. But what's also a secondary note that no one's really honed in on, The passage of the bill, which would require a cutting of the deficit by default in 2013, this is supposed to be enacted as a result of the Congress couldn't sign on the budget back in August and the budget crisis.
The whole super committee that wasn't in the end very super, right? Okay.
Was supposed to include, if the super committee could not come to a conclusion, there would be automatic cuts across the board, including the military. In view of what Barack boasted about last evening and what is happening, in effect, we have entered the military with even more funding, both off budget and on budget, on online budget, so that if these cuts do come through, the military is the effect of the cuts will be negligible on the military.
In other words, it was kind of a preemptive. Let me just join you in this conversation.
Mm-hmm,
it was kind of a preemptive action here. In other words, to appear to be cutting the budget, but actually kind of moving the money around from here to there to prepare for the likelihood of more cuts coming in 2013. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I got it. You know, and I think a lot of people will get it, but it does get kind of complex because you can say, I am cutting the budget, when in fact you're not cutting the budget. You're doing something quite different. And it's like those shell games they used to play in Times Square, you know.
I suspect dearly that this is where Barack will move if he is elected in the second term, and any other candidates that are currently on the dais, if I may, for Republican or Democrat, for possible presidency. That we would not engage in the conversation, and that I'm looking for intelligible candidates. I've heard that there's a Republican who is running who has not gotten much airplay, who's talking about really taking finance, private funding out of presidential campaigns. And that's very key. That's a critical note that we need to deal with so that the American public can have balanced conversation without these lobbyists and private funders.
See, this is the point that you're making. A very important point is not a point that many of the candidates are making because they are raising money, okay, from these people. So it's a bit unseemly for them to denounce people who raise money from private interests when they're doing the very same thing. But you're absolutely right. You know, with the Supreme Court Citizen United case, with the idea that corporations are people or have personhoods, et cetera, economic interests that have a stake in the game, that are trying to influence legislation, have been given an essence validation to do so, and the corruption of the political system is going unchallenged, essentially, in the debates that take place. Very few of these issues are ever raised. These politicians who claim to be anti-big government turn out not to be when it comes to their interest. There's a big story in the New York Times today about Mr. Rick Santorum. You know, most of the debate about Rick has been his views on gay marriage, but the New York Times points out that in the years before he lost his Pennsylvania Senate seat in 2006, Mr. Small Government Rick Santorum worked hard to win hundreds of millions of dollars in additional Medicare money for hospitals in Puerto Rico, where he had certain interests, okay? So, you know, he had joined the board. When he left the Senate, he joined the board of Universal Health Services, where he collected, in director's fees, do you know how much, Kat? $395,000 and stock options before resigning each year. So what we have here is, you know, kind of a mob of total hypocrites who are saying one thing to the public but doing something else behind the scenes to enrich themselves and support their efforts.
We Mr. have, Schechter?
Yeah.
I just say ask you one last thing. I really wonder. I don't wonder. I think the gloves are off. They're using brass knuckles to beat the American people down. It is a sad day for where we are, but hopefully the circumstances will awaken us to what we must do. We got to fight back and get beyond the facade of blaming each other. Even they want low information voters. They don't want us to be informed, so we'll make unintelligible decisions about what they're doing. We have to keep doing. Keep up the good work, and thank you so much.
And thank you for calling, because this is exactly the point of view that needs to be heard by more people on a regular basis. Thank you for calling in. Your passion about it is something that's shared by so many people. Don't forget, the public approval of the Congress of the United States these days is about 7 to 8% of the American people. Why they approve, I don't know. I don't even know who they are, but it's a tiny minority. Most people are disgusted with politics, Republican and Democratic politics, disgusted by all of them. And that's why it seems to me important that we follow this issue closely. We recognize and track and dissect, as I like to do, you know, what's really going on here. I do it on my blog on newsdissector.com every day. Today, I have some critique of these defense cuts, which you might want to read online. But nevertheless, this is the kind of debate that I like to have here on NewsDissector. Sector Radio. I'm so happy that we got this caller. We welcome more callers in the next half hour at 888-874-4888. 888, that's a free call, 874-4888. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the Grammy Awards. Is it time to occupy the Grammys? That's a question that I posed on Al Jazeera. The recent cuts in Grammy Award music categories display an audacious cultural insensitivity. I wrote those words and I'm standing by them. Your comments would be welcome. We're going to be hearing from one of the artists who's been fighting on this issue, Bobby Sanabria and his lawyer, coming up soon in the next segment here. But let's hear a little bit of Bobby's music to just get in the mood.
Mr. Candido Camero. Is everyone ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. We need your help.
Hey, 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 hey.
I can just listen to this for the rest of the half hour and be totally satisfied. That's Wild Jungle from Kenya is the name of the album on Jazz Heads. Bobby Sanabria is conducting the Manhattan School of Music Afro-Cuban Jazz Orchestra featuring Candido. And some of this was the music of Machito, I believe. At any rate, it's great music. It's important music. It's music that brings love and joy to many people, and yet it's music that can no longer be considered for a Grammy Award because of new rules by the Grammys that have eliminated some 31 categories of 109 categories, which include Hawaiian music, Cajun music, all kinds of music that are not big sellers, the ethnic music, music from different communities in America. The Grammys are there to promote basic what we would call diversity of culture. And yet, what's happening? They're dropping these categories, and the artists are very upset about it. Bobby, how did you feel when you heard about this decision by the Grammys?
Well, the decision was announced to us on April 6th of 2011, last year, through an email to all of the 20,000 members of NARIS, the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences. When I first got the email, I didn't open it because I thought, oh, they're going to add some new categories or whatever. But all of a sudden, when I went to a rehearsal, I was driving to Manhattan, my cell phone started ringing off the hook. Finally, I answered it, and they go, people were asking me, did you see what the Grammys just did? And I go, no. So finally, I stopped, went to a cafe where they had a computer in downtown Manhattan, opened up the email, and I said, oh, my God. So it was like getting hit with a sledgehammer. So when we started tallying up amongst other people, friends and colleagues of mine, how many categories, and then finding out that over 70% of the categories were ethnically and racially based, we went into a fit. So that's why we've been fighting this. We've been organizing, and finally we announced a lawsuit against the Grammys, a class action lawsuit, to bring back the Latin jazz category, which is a uniquely American form of music. It was born in the United States in 1939 with Machito and the Afro-Cubans. You just heard some of his music being played by my students at the Manhattan School of Music on an album that I was actually nominated for a Latin Jazz Grammy in the Latin Grammys, which is the Latin component of the Grammys, LARAS, L-A-R-A-S, Latin Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences, which is different from the mainstream Grammys. So our contention is, besides...
So the Grammys are sort of segregated on top of everything else.
Exactly.
And
none of these categories are represented on the main telecast. And it would be very easy for them to do so in creative ways, matching with different artists who are very extremely popular with artists who are out of the mainstream. But there's no creativity there. Ever since 2002, when the Grammys presidents changed, and Neil Portnow is our current president, it's become corporate. And instead of championing the cause of musicians, they're fighting against the cause of musicians.
Let me make one thing clear.
We're not against the Grammys. The Grammys do great things. For example, the Grammy Foundation, the Grammy in the schools program, the Grammy High School All-Star Jazz Big Band. But in this case, they made a fatal error, and they did it chauvinistically. They did it unilaterally without asking any of the membership. They did it in secret over an 18-month period with a secret subcommittee. They refused to reveal the minutes, even though it's our right as members to know what they talked about, how they did this. So that's why we're fighting. It's unfair. It's undemocratic, completely undemocratic.
And it's culturally offensive also, because people are being denied, the public is being denied, deprived of access to musical traditions that they may not be aware of or may not have, up-to-date, information about in terms of the new music, in these categories. And you're part of a lawsuit. Roger Maldonado is with us. He's the attorney here. Roger, what is the lawsuit? What is the claim that you guys are making?
The claim is that the Recording Academy did not abide by its own bylaws, which required the trustees to set out the criteria according to which the Grammy nomination process will take place. And the only information that they've made public with respect to what those criteria are is a July 6th memorandum from last year that was sent to all Recording Academy members. And that memorandum makes clear that they're supposed to establish criteria in a open and transparent manner, in consultation with the members and with the members' elected board of governors, in a way that doesn't discriminate and uses the same criteria with respect to each category. They didn't do that here.
Roger and Bobby, you know, I spent 8 years at ABC News. I was a producer on the inside of the big network, you know, and it's CBS that's producing the Grammys with NARAS, the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences. And I could just picture the meeting that's taking place inside, CBS, where they're saying, like, guys, can't you streamline this? Let's have some more big stars. Let's not have all this music that nobody really is buying. Let's just stay with the music that is the most popular music, which goes against the whole principle of the Grammys. I think it was Frank Sinatra in the first Grammy award show who was saying, look, this is not about popularity. It's about excellence, musical excellence. And unfortunately, and money, of course, as Kat is pointing out, you know, by giving me the money sign with her fingers.
But the money always ends up overtaking the mission.
So,
always.
So there we go. Anyway, I'm just throwing this in. What about CBS's role in this? Do we know?
We do not have any information as of yet with respect to who did what in terms of this determination. The defendants have moved to dismiss the complaint, which stops us from being able to take depositions. Once we get past the motion to dismiss, the first thing we will be doing is seeking through documents and depositions the answers to the exact questions that you're posing.
You see, this is the whole question of media responsibility here in the larger set. You know, a media to promote and to, you know, help Americans recognize that our country has changed. We are no longer an all-white, you know, country. We are a country of many colors, many textures, many cultural backgrounds and the like, particularly the Latino community is on the way to becoming a majority of Americans, certainly a majority of minorities in the United States with a big, you know, audience. And by and large, it's all sort of segregated on their own channels. There's very little effort made to cross-fertilize music. In Europe, when you listen to, radio and you listen to music on the radio, you know, you might hear a jazz piece and a blues piece and some sort of obscure European yodeling and then some rock star or what have you. It's a mix. It reflects the culture which we live in, which is also a mix. And yet, you know, here we have the Grammys, a big night for the artists, and they just want to play, you know, the top, of the pops, the most popular music. And as a result, the public is not getting exposed to anything new, anything hip. They're just cheering for the artists they know. And this has, you know, been a tension in music for a long time. I worked in rock and roll radio, and I know what happened when they started imposing sort of lists of what could be played and what couldn't be played, and programming, you know, music so that it would appeal to the largest, lowest common denominator and the largest possible audience. And a lot of artists from different traditions were getting mixed. At the station I worked at, WBCN in Boston, we played blues, we played jazz, we played, you know, all of the rich texture of American music. But when CBS bought the station, and let's put CBS's initials right up there, when CBS bought WBCN, what happened? The station was changed, and suddenly Howard Stern was brought in as the morning man, a classic, you know, the DJ that most Bostonians loved and treasured. Charles Lacordaire was pushed onto another station. All of this was done, you know, they threw a lot of money around to be sure, but the sound of the station changed because of corporate pressures to try to squeeze as much profit as possible, not to use media in any way to educate, engage, involve people. And this is why I think your lawsuit is so important, because you're taking on a major cultural institution which is not following its own rules. Roger, what kind of feedback have you been getting in the legal and musical communities?
We've gotten a lot of support from lawyers and artists who agree with basically exactly what you've just said, Danny. And I think Bobby is the one who's, you know, as a point person and has been in touch with a much broader community with respect to how they feel about the efforts that he and his fellow plaintiffs have been pursuing even before the lawsuit to get this horrible wrong corrected. Bobby? Hello?
Bobby's on a cell phone. I think he's in Kentucky. He may not. He may have lost power. I don't know. I met Bobby the other day, and I was so impressed by his integrity, his intention to really do the right thing here. He's not out to promote himself. This is not some sort of effort to promote, you know, him and his pals. This is really something which is in the public interest, and that's why I'm so passionate about it, Roger, because I don't think this is just an issue for Latino artists to be concerned about. This is an issue for every American to be concerned about, because this is an attack on all of us, an attack on our right to be exposed to a certain amount of cultural diversity. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that is one of the criteria, that's one of the main purposes for the establishment of the Recording Academy, which is to, through its offices, to have the music of its members, not just the popular music, but the music that deserves recognition, be made known to the broader community.
You know, I know that a lot of prominent artists, I've worked with a lot of prominent artists, I should say, when I worked at ABC News 2020, when I worked on the various recording projects, including We Are Family and also Sun City, Artists Against Apartheid. I know that a lot of those artists would speak out about this if they knew about it, if they were getting information about it. A lot of times artists are very absorbed in their own careers and their own schedules and may not be as aware of this, but some are. I think Paul Simon has supported this, Bonnie Raitt has supported this, Santana has supported this. Many other artists are speaking out as well, and I think by the time the Grammys roll around in February at the Staples Center in Los Angeles, when those artists are out front there picketing and informing people about what's happening, I think you'll get a lot more support.
Absolutely. And pieces such as the one that you're doing right now, Danny, are extremely helpful in furthering that cause and having that information disseminated to the public. So on behalf of Bobby and the other named plaintiffs, we thank you. And you should know that because it's a class action, Bobby and the other named plaintiffs really are serving as representatives for all Latin jazz musicians who are Recording Academy members.
Bobby, you're back with us?
Yes, I'm here. I'm back.
Okay, so we've been talking with Roger about the legal lawsuit and about some of the support. What kind of response are you getting from fellow artists?
Well, we've got an incredible response from people like renowned artists like Bonnie Raitt, Herbie Hancock, Alison Krauss. Santana actually publicly stated that what the Grammys did was racist, and he doesn't care if they ever invite him again back to the awards main telecast. So, I mean, you know, we have the support of many, many people in the industry. Unfortunately, the media has covered this story in spurts, and hope now that the Grammy Awards are going to be happening next month shortly. And we'll get some more. Obviously, this interview helps, and we'll get some more coverage in regards to this.
Yeah.
Especially, and I'm sure once the judge makes a decision,
well,
it'll be all over the media.
You know, I just want to point out that Bobby is preparing to give a presentation at a convention of, I guess, jazz educators down south. And, you know, he's on a cell phone, so maybe, you know, the sound has been a little bit dicey. But, you know, the fact that you're with us, Bobby, is really important. You know, we've got to get musical fans, people who love music, people who buy music, people who care about the musical traditions in America, to speak out on this. Having a bunch of prominent artists stand up is important, but getting, you know, ordinary people to stand up. I was very delighted when Al Jazeera website, which is read by people all over the world, picked up my article, "Is It Time to Occupy the Grammys?" By that I mean we want this issue to occupy the minds of people in the Grammys about about what's being done to some of their brothers and sisters, their fellow artists who work hard to kind of reflect various cultural traditions and now find that those traditions are not Grammy worthy. They can no longer be, you know, used as part of the awards program. I mean, that's really upsetting, and it upset me a great deal, and I'm really pleased. You know, Sarah Bastante, a publicist, got me involved in this, and I'm really passionate about it.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, but the main what I want to also state is that it's not just a musical issue about musical diversity, it's about cultural diversity. So it's very important that everybody realize that whether you're a fan of all of these forms of music or not, or even if music is an art form that you're really not that interested in, it's an issue of cultural diversity. What the Grammys did was disenfranchise all these communities, and especially when the mission statement of the Grammy is to not only propagate and educate the public about all of these forms of music, they haven't been fulfilling their mission statement, and we want to take them to task and make sure that they do. We want to make sure that the Grammys fulfill their mission and, do what they were entitled, what they first set out to do in 58, which was to celebrate excellence, not just the big top name sellers.
Yeah, and after, I guess we're getting a lot of background here, a little noise, but it's okay. We can handle it. The point is, here we have, a few years after Katrina, devastated an American city, a musical hub, a center of music, including Cajun music in Louisiana. We have the Grammys dropping the Cajun category. Here is our president from Hawaii, just out in Hawaii, dropping the Hawaiian music category. Who makes these decisions? What kind of sensitivity do they have to all of these different musics? You know, because once you get into them, once you start listening to them, you're like, you know, it's a turn on. It's a part of what makes America so great and so cool. Catherine?
I just wanted to say TKO, like it's like a, you know, technical knockout, like they're just trying to take everybody out. There's no challenge. They want to just keep what a sure thing being a sure thing, you know, for the profit. Why challenge? Why bring a challenge when, you know, like they just can have everything be a sure thing and profit off of that?
You know, a lot of people don't realize the impact and the importance of Latin music and American music and the tradition of Latin culture and American music, Cuban music and the rest. There's a caller on the line. Let's listen. Hello. How you doing?
All right.
You have a call? Who are you?
My name is Frank Williams.
Frank?
And I'm a professional jazz drummer, and I'm also a member of the Academy. And I almost rescinded my membership because of those changes to the rules. I mean, it really, really upset me because one of the things that they did was they got rid of a category called contemporary jazz. Now, this is a jazz category that holds, you know, a lot of fusion, a lot of smooth jazz, which, you know, really, I mean, anybody who's a jazz musician knows that term is an industry term. And it's a music that is pretty much pop music. But they give it this smooth jazz thing to sell records. Now, getting rid of that category puts jazz musicians who are really playing jazz music, who are really playing Latin jazz, which they also got rid of, in the same category with these smooth jazz. So as somebody who's playing a music that is extremely artful, but not necessarily as popular as smooth jazz.
Well, let's
now I got to compete with these guys. And really what this seems to me to be about is it seems to me, and I called the Grammys and talked to one of the representatives and said, this seems like a power grab by the major record company.
Because
the pop artists are the ones who are not affected. The popular artists aren't affected. The ones who play music, Zydeco, or play Hawaiian music, or play jazz, those are the ones that are affected.
Well, you know, I remember when I was working on the Sun City record, you know, I was one of the people working with Little Steven, Bruce Springsteen, Miles Davis, Peter Gabriel, Bono. I mean, it was a list of 54 top artists, including Herbie Hancock, including, Latin artists. Ray Barreto was part of it, you know, and all of that. And you know that no major label had the guts to actually release this album with these megastars. The album became a hit all over the world, the Sun City Record, but none of the labels would go near it. They were afraid of, quote, the controversy, until Bruce Lundvall of Blue Note Records, who's a kind of a jazz man and a record man, stood up and agreed to release Sun City on Manhattan Records. And I remember that very clearly, you know, that the musical industry is really so profit-oriented and so out of touch with what people care about, what our values are, what our needs are, you know, that they were standing against some of their most biggest selling artists, who were committed to challenging apartheid in South Africa, which is now a memory, thank goodness. This weekend is the 100th anniversary of the African National Congress, the organization that Nelson Mandela led, big commemoration going on in South Africa. Jesse Jackson is there. I mean, it's a big deal thing. But all of these labels would not stand with Mandela, would not stand with the people of South Africa, and just as today, they are not standing with the Latin people of our country. Who are
one of the other things, points I wanted to make is I think that this is a direct reaction to last year's Grammys, because last year more indie artists won Grammys than ever before. And as you remember, Esperanza Spalding won the Best New Artist and beat out two very popular people in that category. And so these changes, as far as I'm concerned, are a reaction to that.
And a reaction is part of the word reactionary, which is part of what we're talking about. Bobby, I want to wish you and your colleagues and your fellow artists the best of luck in this fight. How can people find out more? How can they get involved? I know you have a petition that's online also. How can people who want to help on this Grammy issue help?
Very easily. They can go to GrammyWatch.org. Again, GrammyWatch.org. You can sign the petition, and many well-known people have signed it. You can see a timeline, how this goes back to 2002, when Neil Portnow became the president and was the first president that was corporate-friendly instead of musician-friendly. And that's the year that Steely Dan won for Album of the Year over Eminem. And that's when this whole thing really, really, really started, with major labels started complaining about lesser-known artists winning in major categories.
So there you are, the hidden political story. I guess there's a rehearsal going on there while we're talking, and we can hear it in the background. But you know, Bobby, I have to tell you, not only because we're both from the Bronx, but also because I just really was so impressed with your integrity and your artistry, and you have so much to contribute. And I hope that this lawsuit prevails, but if it doesn't, we still need to take action on this issue. We need solidarity and support for these artists, because that's really what is going to make the difference here. And you can get involved. You can help stop this outrageous act of cultural insensitivity, this dropping of these categories, by speaking out to the Grammy organization, signing this petition, supporting these artists who are taking a chance, because you got to remember, they are standing up in an industry when most people are standing down and hiding, essentially, and not really taking stands on important social issues because of their commercial considerations. I have been through this many times on many issues where artists that did stand up were always told by their managers and by their labels, don't do it, it's bad, it'll kill your career, etc. and so forth. The fact that Bobby is leading this fight and other artists are joining him and Roger is doing this lawsuit is something that is very important. GrammyWatch.org, GrammyWatch.org. I had some other music for you, but we're going to go out with another song by Bobby. You can reach me at dissector@mediachannel.org, mediachannel.org. We have a new media channel, by the way, a little confusing here, but mediachannel1.org is the new media channel. My email, dissector@mediachannel.org, my blog, newsdissector.com. As usual, unfortunately, we're out of time. Catherine had a story to tell us about some of the harassment of the Occupy Wall Street people by the courts, going to court and having to wait around for hours and hours and hours. Did you have a quick, can you make it 2 seconds, quick?
I was just going to say really quick, I had an old badge from when I was an EMT for a private ambulance. They found it when we were going through the security, And the security guy told me that I could be arrested for having that.
There you go. The United States of Paranoia. Thanks for sharing that. Thank you for being here. Sue Min is with us, who's a new intern helping us, and we hope that you had a good time at this radio show. Thank you, Gary Noe, for the Progressive Radio Network. Join us again next week at this time and at this station on PRN. FM is the actual website. You can get the download of the podcast as well there and on iTunes. Thank you. I'm Danny Schechter, your news dissector. Until next week.
Your Honor, for many years, I operated a Ponzi scheme through the investment advisory side of my business. I knew what I was doing was wrong, indeed criminal.
The shine on America's shoes got gold. When Wall Street stepped into the fold, Congress paid off, workers paid off. Stanford, AIG, and Madoff. Credit swaps, credit stops, empty wallets, and empty shops, and bank walking with AAA.